wedding, and also the son who you raised at home, his wedding too, Jason's wedding?
Yes, in 1998, my son Jason married at Coral Gables, Florida, and she came to visit for the weekend. And I married my second wife, Elaine, in 2014. And so there we went to the Supreme Court and were married by her with our immediate families around us.
Well, again, condolences on this loss that is personal for you as well as global. Stephen Weisenfeld, plaintiff in the 1975 Weinberger versus Weisenfeld case. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg once called him her favorite plaintiff. And this update, President Trump has just said he plans to announce his pick to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg on Friday or Saturday. He said his shortlist is down to 5 people. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teodosena, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, and Adriano Contreras. Special thanks to our general manager, Julie Crosby, Becca Stelle. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a program director to manage our programming department. This full-time position requires proven experience in program directing, radio audio production, management, and supervisory skills with volunteers, with an emphasis on teamwork and a collaborative setting, and the ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. The deadline to apply for this position is Saturday, October 3rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm/employment.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01 a.m. on a Monday morning. It's time for some more talk radio with your host, Cecil Prescott. Stay tuned.
Oh, Miss Aretha. Oh, what a way to start the morning. This is More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. Today is the 21st of September, 2020, and you are listening to Cecil Prescott. I'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Celeste Carey. And today is a day where I think for the first time in a long while, I'm grateful to see the fog, and I don't think it's smoke here. It's smog, and I can breathe in the air, and I don't smell smoke. So I'm grateful for that transformation. And we remember those who continue to be impacted by the wildfires, and thankful for all who have been able to offer assistance in many ways, whether it is offering food or shelter or firefighters. There are many people who continue to show how to be community. So in this day, as we continue to struggle here in the Pacific Northwest, We remember that we are together in our struggle, as we also remember those who are struggling in the Gulf area of the United States, and indeed those throughout the world who are continue to be impacted by storms and climate change and many things that are impacting our community. Well, today is a day, this weekend, we recall the impact of the life and legacy of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. All of us, I think, have been impacted by her life and her legacy, and those of us who've been able to listen to Democracy Now, heard some things of the impact of her life. And I don't think many of us were surprised by the president and the majority leader in the Senate who rushed to want to appoint someone to fill the seat of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Now we know that the president, in deference to funeral, won't name an appointment until after she is remembered and memorialized this week, not until the end of the week. But that doesn't mean that we all became aware of not only how important her seat is, and it is a time in which those who are on the right and those who are moderates and liberals realize the impact that someone will have if they are nominated and voted in by the Senate to fulfill her seat. Currently, there are 8 justices on the Supreme Court, 4 who are considered conservative and 4 who are considered moderate liberal. And if whoever is nominated and selected to fill that seat will tip the scale one way or the other. If the conservatives and the president nominate someone who will be a conservative, the Supreme Court will be firmly in the grasp of those who hold a conservative legal philosophy, and that will impact the lives of all of us, not only civil liberties, women's right to choose, many things that are impacted by what will happen. Certainly, we are aware that Justice Ginsburg, dying wish was that her seat not be filled until after the inauguration of a new of a president in January. And many people, all of us, are concerned about what will happen, not only about the hypocrisy of the Republican leaders and Republican senators who 4 years ago, when the president, then President Obama, nominated a candidate to fill the Supreme Court vacancy, several months before the election, Senate Majority Leader Mitch O'Connell said that it would be inappropriate to fill the seat in an election year. And other Republicans also said the same things, including Senator Graham from South Carolina, who said that, you know, you can quote me on this, and in terms of then saying 4 years ago that you should not fill a seat until new president is inaugurated. Senator Grab, who's in fact in a tough Senate campaign right now, has certainly reversed his views, as other top senators have also said, top Republican senators have said. But saying all of that, I think this is a moment of not only introspection and reflection on the life and legacy, but also a time for those of us who consider ourselves progressives or those who want to uphold the legacy and the life of Justice Ginsburg. It's a time for action. Shortly after her death, after the death of Justice Ginsburg, U.S. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez recorded a video to all of us in which she said some things that are, I think, we all should hear. And Sonia has that recording ready for us, so we will listen to her what AOC had to say about RBG and what Representative Ocasio-Cortez say that we should do. So let's listen to the representative's remarks, and then we will come back and have a conversation with all of us. So Sonia, we're ready when you are.
I need you to be ready. I need you to be ready. And I need you to be ready to be responsive. And by that, I mean, we don't quite know what the next play is in terms of this issue on the Supreme Court, right? Mitch McConnell sent out a statement tonight. And as I said at the opening, the very last dying wish of RBG was that her vacancy not be filled until the new president takes office in January. That was her dying wish. Tonight, Mitch McConnell publicly, the night of her passing, he couldn't wait 24 hours, issued a statement saying that he was going to give Trump a vote in violation of her dying wish. People can say how appalling, people could say this is horrible, etc. But we know who this man is. We know who this man is. This is a man who does not care about a dying woman's final wish, clearly. And so, listen, we need to size up what we are up against. And what we are up against is a profoundly corrupt, established network. Because this isn't just Trump, right? Trump would not be able to do any of the things, almost any of the things that he has done, if it wasn't for an entire Republican apparatus that allows him, that defends him, and that propels him. So this isn't just about Trump, and that's why I talk about that this presidential election is not the end of this. This presidential election is just the tip of this, because Trump would not have been able to do these things if a Republican Senate didn't protect him, advance him, and allow him to do these things. So this is on every Republican's hands right now. And so when I say the last thing I want you to do is be ready, what I mean is, listen, Mitch McConnell's ready. He's ready. He wants to jam through a nominee. Who cares? You know, in 2016, he blocked Obama from getting his Supreme Court nominee in his final year, and with Merrick Garland. And Mitch McConnell, he said, "Oh, we can't do this in a president's final year. We need to let people have their say." You think he cares about that now? No, he doesn't care about that now, because he cares about power. These people do not care about democracy. They do not care about fairness. They do not care about equality. They do not care about justice. They care about power, and they care about money, and they care about making more money. They don't care who dies. They don't care whose rights get violated. And that's why we need to show up. So I need you to be ready, because what that means is that we need to be ready to organize. We need to be ready to follow grassroots leaders on the ground. And it's not just about listening to me. It's about listening to people who have been doing this work for generations as well. But everyone has something to give. And again, I know we're all tired. So our thing to do tonight is to identify, what are you going to give? Are you going to check your voter registration tonight? Because you haven't done it in a while. Are you going to identify five people that you don't know how they're going to vote, or you don't know if they're going to vote? Are you going to identify five people and five of your friends, five people that only you can get through to, or someone that you think you can talk to? Are you going to do that tonight? Are you going to do that over the next week? If you have some extra time right now, are you going to be able to use that time? Are you going to be able to write? Are you going to be able to correct misinformation that you see on Facebook and social media? Because we're going to need that too. We're going to need a lot. We're going to need everything that you can give between now and Election Day. We leave it all on the field. Okay? We got to leave it all on the field. But now is not the moment for cynicism. Now is not the moment for hopelessness. Now is not the moment to give up. We do not give up. We don't give up. And really, cynicism is not just unproductive, it's actively harmful for our democracy. It's an active harm for the progressive movement. It's an active harm to our democracy. It's an active harm for our future. Because cynicism says it's over. Cynicism says we can't do it. Cynicism says don't bother trying. And if those are the sentiments coming out, then at this point, you are helping every person that is trying to marginalize the rights, the economic future, and the just prosperity of people that we, and that of all people that are deserving here in our country, which is everybody. Everybody's deserving of safety and prosperity and justice. So listen, let this moment radicalize you. Let this moment really put everything into stark focus, because this election has always been about the fight of and for our lives. And if anything, tonight is making that more clear to more people than ever before. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to get more and more and more clear to up until Election Day. Things are going to happen. They are. We have an authoritarian president. That's what we have. He has no regard for the dignity of human life. He has no regard for law. He has no regard for justice. He has no regard for anything unless it personally helps him and his power and his money and that of the Republican establishment. That's just what it is. It's just what it is. So listen, on the left, there's a huge diversity, right? And we get mad at each other. That's the way it is, because it's incredibly frustrating. I get incredibly frustrated. You all know I get incredibly frustrated with my own party too. We all have our disagreements. That's fine, because we all recognize that November, frankly, I wish it wasn't like this, and it only serves to highlight the brokenness of our entire system. But whether we like it or not, November's about survival. November's about survival. And we need to work to honor all of those who came before us to fight for our future and to fight for our democracy and to fight for something more just. Because our ancestors have stared down the barrel of hopelessness before too. They've done that too. And they persisted. And they allowed us to be here. And now we need to work to allow, you know, one day when we are ancestors, for us to allow the people that are to come to be here too and to thrive too. So that's what this is about. Native, you know, Native people, they talk about kind of like the precept or the concept of seven generations. That every moment and every decision, every point that we are here right now is the result of the decisions and the actions taken seven generations before, and the actions and the decisions we make now should also be made with the seven generations ahead of us in mind. This is a seventh generation moment. This is our present moment. And are we going to allow our fear to paralyze us and to make us give in? Or are we going to turn our fear into fuel?
But before Justice Ginsburg passed tonight, the last Supreme Court justice...
And that is Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez passionately reminding us of what we have to do. This is our seventh generation moment. You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott, and our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We would appreciate your calls and your reflection, not only on the life and legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but on the call to action that we just heard so passionately from Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Several things that she said that jumped out at me. Among those were that we are in the fight for our lives. And she also said quite honestly of her continue an ongoing disagreement with her political party. But she also reminds us that many people have are holding on to cynicism. The representative reminds us that cynicism is actively harmful to our democracy, actively harmful to the progressive movement. Cynicism say that don't bother even trying. And when we all are tempted to fall down into cynicism, she reminds us that our ancestors, those who fought for us, stared down in the barrels of hopelessness, and they persisted. We too need to persist. We too need to hold on, not only hold on, but to continue the battle. Give us a call and share some of your reflections. Particularly, I wonder how many people feel about the election. I think it would. Celeste chose those comments from the representative. I think in part because I think she challenged those of us who consider ourselves progressives or liberals or socialists or you fill in the description, who are so easily discouraged by the two-party political system. And Representative Ocasio-Cortez got some some grief or some pushback by continue to support Senator Sanders and even seconding his nomination as a Democratic nomination. And so if anyone symbolized the battle between moderates and progressives in the Democratic Party and the continued division within that party, the representative does. However, in her passionate remarks that we just heard, she reminds us that even though the system is not perfect, that we do not have the luxury of waiting for the perfect, and that we are, in her words, in the battle for our lives. And then she offered some things, very practical things that we can and should do, whether it is IDing voters, writing correcting misinformation we see on social media, those who feel that they are unable to march in the streets. There are so much more you can do. I've spoken to many people, those who are older, those who have medical conditions which prevent them from being out in the public, and there are so many people doing so much incredible work. I spoke to one woman yesterday who mentioned how after hearing about the death of Justice Ginsburg, she fell into grief. But she also said, there's something more that I can and should do. And she picked up her pen and she mentioned that, you know, her penmanship is not picture perfect, not like her third grade penmanship teacher would have preferred. But she picked up a pen and started writing letters to voters in other states, voters who could make a difference in so-called purple states by urging them to vote. And that's just one example of one person and what they could do, recognizing the urgency of the moment and the things that we need to do to combat hopelessness. So how do we stare down the barrels of hopelessness? And how do we persist? There is much that is happening in the next, 45 days or so, 40 days or so before the elections, and things that we can do. And we have to make a difference. Now, I'm interested in hearing what people feel, whether they feel hopeless or whether they grasp onto what Representative Ocasio-Cortez just reminded us, grasp onto our responsibility, which he says, our seventh generation moment. What are we doing? What can we do? What keeps you encouraged? What prevents you from falling into cynicism? And if you have find yourself in that realm of cynicism, what might others do to help you move beyond cynicism? Give us a call here and share your thoughts. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. It is important for all of us to participate in our democracy, as the representative just told us. And as she said, it's a fight for the progressive movement. We cannot, we shall not, she said, fall into cynicism. Mother Jones has a famous quote, "Mourn the dead and fight like hell for the living." So we mourn and remember Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but we also have to fight for the living, not only for the living, but as Representative Ocasio-Cortez, for those who come after us. As our ancestors fought the struggle for us and did not give up, we are called for all those who come after us, the generations who come after us. This is our seventh generation moment. So, know that the two-party system is not perfect, but what are we doing to transform our world? And how do we hold on to hope in this moment? I think one thing I admire about Ruth Bader Ginsburg is that she just kept on going. She kept on going. She was an inspiration. When met with personal health challenges, she kept on going. Her life, when she was unable to get a job because she was a woman, she kept on going. She persisted. She persisted in law school. She persisted on the bench. She persisted arguing cases in court. She persisted in arguing cases before the Supreme Court, and she just persisted and persisted. And all of us, those who are familiar with Ruth Bader Ginsburg from her later years, and might marvel at the fact that in spite of health challenges, she did not give up. She continued working. 87 years old, suffering from cancer, multiple times in the hospital. But she continued to hear and write. She continued to hear arguments, maybe from her from her hospital bed or a bed at her home. She continued to maintain to write decisions. She continued to speak with her colleagues. She just continued on and on. Maybe that's why she gained the acclaim and recognition in her later years, as she took on the hip-hop name, the notorious RBG, in homage to the rap artist, notorious B.I.G. But there was something about her that should continue to inspire all of us. It should continue to inspire us when we are tired, when we want to give up. And so that's why I think it's so important to hear Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a young woman representative. I think she continues to be the youngest representative in the U.S. Congress, at least at this moment. Find strength and inspiration from the elder Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And so Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she took up the banner that was laid down, that was passed on to her by people and women such as Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And do not be fooled. The right recognize what this moment offers for them. For decades, and this is something I think that progressives should take note of, those on the right, conservatives, have continued working, sometimes silently, sometimes quite openly, in making sure that their message was heard, that they continue to prepare up-and-coming politicians, lawyers, judges. We all are aware, you know, one thing that will be a lasting legacy of the Trump presidency. We are aware, increasingly aware, of how Trump and Mitch McConnell and the Republican majority in the Senate quietly and quite effectively continue to pack the courts all up and down the federal system with conservative ideologues, and not only just conservatives, but those who are passionate and want to push their cause. And so part of the legacy of the Trump presidency, even if he is defeated in November, is that the federal courts throughout the United States are packed with judges who will have an impact on all our lives for decades. Decades.
See, so we got a couple of callers who want to share their thoughts.
That is an opportunity for us to share. And thank you, Sonia. I was not looking on Messenger, and I just kept on speaking. So let's go to a couple of our callers and hear the wisdom that other people have. Let's go to our first caller.
Robbie, you're live.
Good morning. Good morning. I hate to bring an unpopular opinion right now. I kind of think the mess that we're in right now is because of the notorious RBG. You described she kept going. She had health issues. She should have retired under the Obama administration, had a nice appointee, a nice exit. Instead, she was possessed by power. I believe she didn't want to relinquish that power. She wasn't exactly a progressive individual. And as you said, you know, the system, the two-party system may be broken. I don't think it's broken. The two-party system is fixed, and it's doing exactly as it's intended. And I'm not trying to spread the cynicism that you're talking about, but also that word cynic, cynicism is derived from the word cynic, which is actually from the guy who came up with the term is Diogenes of Sinope. Now, much like anarchy and anarchists, you know, anarchy isn't a very well understood word in our world anymore. It's kind of lumped into all these different things. Cynic simply is not participating in these systems. And honestly, to be quite frank, I think if everybody got on the same page and didn't participate in the system, we would have a much easier time making the world that we want to do, compared to falling into this game of the two-party system, forcing us to, you know, be a part of it. My unpopular opinion, I know she did a lot of great things, but time changes people. So I do think she was a complete, you know, I understand and respect a lot of the work that she did. In the later years, I don't think it was enough. And now, because she was hanging on to the power, going in and out of the hospital, decided to keep doing her job. Now look at the mess that we're in. But furthermore, the Supreme Court justices aren't even, you know, democratically appointed. They're appointed for life. Everything about this system should be showing why we should be against this. And what I continue seeing happen here is like these breadcrumbs given to us, trying to encourage us to support and do it. But, you know, just to kind of like talk about this out loud, I used to be in the mortgage industry in 2008, right out of high school. I was the person that was trying to qualify people on the loan modification program. to keep them in their houses. And I had this idea at this time, if all these people that were going through foreclosures or near foreclosures, if they stopped participating, if they stopped paying their bills, they couldn't do anything about it. Yeah, they'd probably evict, you know, 10 people, but out of the millions of people that were facing that, I feel that if we band together, and here's to answer one of your questions, how I find hope right now and what I find continue going is, like, if you want to vote, if you want to participate in that system, that's great, but that's not enough. What we need happening right now is what's happening on the street. It's happening in the mutual aid networks that I've been participating in, helping give relief to people, because our government can't. Our government's making people evacuate, and then they're like, where? And there's no answer. And now it's up to the people to do it. And so what I see happening is us people who fall too much into the system, not doing enough outside of the system of what we need to do. So this is my opinion on it right now. And it's kind of interesting watching it go into it. But yeah, I wasn't a fan of how she turned out to be and the situation that we're in now, which is a very unfortunate circumstance.
Hey, Robbie, stay on because you raised a couple of points I'd like us to speak about. One is I appreciate your observation about whether or not she held on to her position too long, and you know, power becomes so tempting, and it's hard to give up. So I think that's a valid criticism. In terms of those who hold on to the power so long. And I think, you know, a valid critique, why did she hold on for so long? One thing we should recognize, though, however, is that whether or not if she had retired early on during the Obama administration, whether or not if the Republicans were in control, whether or not a progressive could have gotten her seat or not. A question I have for you, Robbie, in terms of talking about the failures of our system and as you said, looking at other things such as the mutual aid society and how we have a tendency to say like, oh, this is all we need to do, that we need to do much more. What more besides mutual aid society and working in small communities do you think that we need to do?
We need structures of systems we want to see in place. Right now we're in a really interesting dynamic as a society because we've had the energy department established. Right now we have power lines going all over, and this is technology that was developed in the 1900s. It's completely obsolete, but because it's set up, we continue to follow it. The same thing goes for our politics. We have structures in place like the Electoral College. All these things don't make sense anymore, but we all continue to do it. And it's funny because I'll bring it up to a college-educated person, and they'll go back and forth with me about it and ultimately end up being like, well, yeah, it doesn't make sense, but this is what it is. And so I think if we could all get on the same page as a human consciousness and say, you know what, like, instead of voting for a president, why don't we call for the right to a revolution, which is, you know, kind of in the Declaration of Independence or whatever, but which is a non-legal binding contract I'm aware of. But there's things that we could be doing to actually apply pressure on the system. Like, I mean, here's an interesting thought, right? So the Electoral College have 270 you have to clear 270 Electoral College votes. If there is no if there isn't an Electoral College vote, which there always will be, if there is some form of a third party that creates that gridlock to stop it, you know, we would probably get further than where we are trying to support Joe Biden. That's just my thoughts. But I mean, you know, a lot of people are really, right now it's interesting because I've been involved in new, I've just been hyper aware of, you know, news and all this stuff all my life, really. I mean, since I was 10 years old, and George Bush got the Supreme Court, you know, verdict in Florida for winning the election, which was entirely fraudulent. You know, back then, the popular vote, Al Gore won, all the same things. And what I'm witnessing here is we're falling victim to the same exact things that have been happening since the 60s with the Democratic Party nomination, where they're shunting all the progressives, which is what the base wanted, and we're being force-fed this stuff. And so if we keep thinking that, oh, well, it's a bad system, but we got to do it this time, how do we get beyond that? So right. That's why I think that I think we need to band together as people and start actually doing, you know, like, hey, let's stop nobody pay their mortgage. You know, what a concept. What would happen to these structures if we banded together like that and participated in civil disobedience? I feel we would get much further, much like the Black Lives Matter protests going on right now. Anyway, I'll let you respond.
Hey, thank you so much, Robbie. And I think I agree with you in terms of there are multiple responses that we can do. And there is no, for me at least, there is no one way that is perfect. So I agree with you looking at the Electoral College system and, first of all, discovering why it was established. It was a way to maintain Southern power and things such as that. There are multiple things that we can do. I don't think that there's one option. And I think critiquing our system, but at the same time, people are hurting. So whether it's mutual aid society or whether it's actually reforming social practices and, you know, get involved in the difficult, boring examination of our policies. Some people say, oh, that's just maintaining a system that is already falling apart. But if it has an impact on real people's lives, then maybe we should think about examples of how do we expand aid to people and families. But thank you so much, Robbie. Let's hear what other people have to say. You are listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO. This is Monday, the 21st of September, and I am Cecil Prescott. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187, and we have some people in line. So let's hear what Francis has to say. Good morning, Francis. How are you this morning?
Hi. I found your last caller interesting, and I do agree with some point. However, I'd like to focus on the positive and the fact that, as Congressman John Lewis said, keep your eye on the prize. Okay, it's not the individuals involved, it's the message that we want, or the actions that we want to happen. As I recall that when Ruth Ginsburg won her case in the Supreme Court for the gentleman who was trying to get death benefits from his wife when his wife died,
yes.
And she won that case with a very, very, very conservative Supreme Court, and she was able to convince them to think differently or to look differently and to look at a different perspective. And we are a nation of laws, and there are a lot of people banding together right now to do such things as in the Innocence Project to assist people who are actually being affected by these the corruption within the legal justice system. There are people who are actually actively doing things within the law to change the outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall Judge Chief Justice Earl Warren was considered to be a conservative.
Yes.
But under his court, the civil rights laws were passed because the logic of what is right and wrong was presented in a manner in which even the most conservative judge cannot refuse. And that's
right.
What's happening with Chief Justice right now. The current Chief Justice has often been the vote in support of a quote-unquote liberal cause, because right. the logic was presented in a way that could not be refused. And to me, that gives me hope. And I believe that's what Chief Justice or Ruth Bader Ginsburg believed in, that the message, as she said, you know, fight for what you believe in, but do it in a way to where you can bring others with you, to where yeah. they see the wisdom of your of the way you are thinking, and they cannot refuse it. Oh. And that's what she did, and that's why she was, why everyone is mourning her loss, because she was very good at it, and we need to become very good at it, and not despair. Right. But continue that, you know, keep the eye on the prize. You know, we know what's right, what's wrong, and most people do. But you have to convince them of it sometimes. So
yeah.
we just keep on keeping on, as they say.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I appreciate, Francis, when you bring up that point of Earl Warren, you know, when he was appointed by Eisenhower, he had been a somewhat conservative governor of California, and you know,
yeah.
considered a safe pick. And under his you know, when he became, under his time in the Supreme Court, that's been these, you know, the Warren Court is now iconic
yeah.
in terms of civil liberties and civil rights. And you never know. And as you mentioned,
Judge Roberts right now was considered to be conservative, but he is actually sided with the what has been called the more liberal side of the court on several recent cases.
Yeah,
because
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, we can appoint the most conservative, as Trump says he's going to appoint a woman, most conservative, you know, woman that we possibly can find on that court, but she also has empathy, she also has reason, she also hears logic, and that sometimes arguments that are presented cannot be refused because they are correct.
Yeah.
So, well, we should not
indeed.
Despair.
Right. You know, the previous caller, you know, was sharing some things, his thoughts about, you know, whether or not these small steps are possible, or whether or not you can make systemic change by just going along. But
well, one thing, you know, I think that a Democratic president or a Democrat president, even though they've compromised and gone along with a lot of corporate structure things, they were elected on a principle that is totally opposite of what the current president is doing, and to where their conscience can also always be prodded. You know, there's, you know, hold them to their word, hold them to the, as Ocasio-Cortez said, don't give up, but, you know, hold them to it.
All right.
Keep persisting.
Keep persisting.
Right. Okay. Anyway,
one thing that
what were you going to say?
No, I said one thing that Ruth Ginsburg said was real change, enduring change, happens one step at a time. And the quote that you referred to, she said, fight for the things that you care about, but do it in a way that will lead others to join you. And one thing about the Supreme Court is that, you know, you have 9 justices. They get to know one another. They share one another. And one thing that was really odd for me was that Justice Ginsburg got along so well with former Justice Rehnquist. They had this
that
love for opera. It didn't make sense. And maybe part of the problem is, you know, maybe that's a problem because it's such a close-knit group that they're unable to see beyond that close-knit circle. So maybe you need
However,
someone just...
However, that's kind of the case with people in general, you know. How can you be friends with that guy who thinks this way? Or how can you like her when she thinks this way? But if you stop and think, those people have perspectives that are not being explored and are not being talked to or, you know, coaxed or persuaded. And that makes a difference when you're able to recognize the humanity in everybody, even though their opinions are totally different than what you believe. But somewhere in there, there is a similarity that needs to be recognized.
Yeah, we need to recognize our common humanity.
Right. And I believe that most people, even some of the most perceived to be ignorant, racist, ridiculous people there are in our country right now, they have a spot somewhere where they can be made to recognize, and that's our job.
Right. We have to find that common place where we can agree on and go from there. And recognize our humanity.
It might sound cliche, but most people understand the expression fair is fair. And fair is fair. And who doesn't understand that?
Mm-hmm.
If they're brought to take a look at it. So.
All right. You know,
anyway, you have a good day. I got to go.
Okay, thank you so much, Frances. Be well. Another quote from Justice Ginsburg, she said once, I'm a very strong believer in listening and learning from others. I think that says a lot, maybe not only how she operates, but also it may be a way in which we get beyond the so-called political divide by listening. And it's a process, and it's frustrating, and it's a long one. And so that's why I thought it was so important to listen to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who, if anyone right now is in terms of the Democratic Party on the progressive end, and someone who remains principled. But she reminds us that in our society, it takes time, and sometimes it becomes frustrating. It will become frustrating. If it doesn't become frustrating, then there's something wrong with us. But we must continue on, and we must persist. And real change, enduring change, as Justice Ginsburg said, happens one step at a time. But we must first take that step. We must continue the fight. And we must not give up. So in this moment, when there is so much at stake, and whether or not we feel that the system is so corrupt that there is no hope, we must find ways in which to do it. Whether it is, as Robbie's saying, by looking at the system with a critical eye and saying, there are different ways of coming together, and by encouraging things such as mutual aid societies and ways of cooperation, or whether it is persisting within the two-party political system, which is set up to maintain the system, and maybe incremental changes are possible. Regardless of where you find yourself, do not give up. There is so much more work to do. We need one another and find ways to encourage one another. In this moment, in this nation, when we are, as Representative Ocasio-Cortez reminds us, living under an authoritarian regime, we must continue to find ways to not only to resist, but as Robbie suggested, offer different ways of building community. At the same time, offering assistance to those who continue to suffer from this authoritarian regime. Resist we must, but also realizing that real change often comes one step at a time. It is slow, but we must maintain our persistence. Thank you so much for listening on our radio station today and listening to this program, More Talk Radio. We need to continue the struggle, continue to persist, and continue to be advocates of change. Stay tuned and be persistent in your work. This is Cecil Prescott. Stay safe and be well.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about